Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Positive Education Podcast. My name is Ash Manuel. I'm really excited for today's episode, but before I introduce today's guest, I just want to reflect on an amazing event that happened on September 12th. A couple of weeks ago of recording this podcast today, but it was the world's biggest gratitude lesson. Now, we had 550 classrooms from around the world join us for the live event. Now, unfortunately, due to time zones, not everyone could be live, but it was really heartwarming to see all these young people. We had four-year-olds right through to 18, 19-year-old school students, but then also adults, the teachers, participating as well. And we had the screen up at times where the students could see each other participating as well. And the purpose of that event is to bring young people together from around the world. It's the fifth time that we've done it. Bring them together from around the world to practice gratitude. And it's such a wonderful event. The replay is available, so feel free to access that replay if you go to growingwithgratitude.com.au, and you'll see on the homepage there the link to access the replay. So highly recommend participating in your with your class if you haven't already been involved. If you weren't live or if you already watched the replay, feel free to access that and have a go with your class. Now, I want to introduce today's guest, who is Beck Shea. Beck is a primary school teacher at Geelong Grammar Toorak Campus, which is in Melbourne, in Victoria, in Australia. And the reason why I wanted to really talk, or really keen to talk to Beck, is because she's so passionate about positive education. She's completed her Masters of Applied Positive Psychology through the Melbourne University, and she's got great insights. And she shared some wonderful insights today on this podcast about ideas to implement in the classroom, about how they go about positive education at the Toorak campus. And she talks about a theme. So each term they have a different theme, and she gives the example of a theme they used in this episode, which was fantastic. Really great insights to how she thinks about positive education and gives some good examples that you can apply yourself. And that's the reason why I love talking to teachers, because teachers are in the classroom teaching themselves. Obviously, they're the ones in front of the students. They're teaching the subjects, but also they're teaching the well-being, the positive education as well. And we dive in today about how Beck goes about that and also how Geelong Grammar do that as well. So without further ado, we'll get started with this podcast, and I'll introduce Beck. Welcome to the podcast, Beck.
Thank you for having me, Ash. What a pleasure it is.
Now, jinx. I'm really excited to have you on because I know how passionate you are about positive education in schools, and I really love talking to teachers like yourself about how they execute and implement well-being or positive education into the classroom. So I'd love to touch on that a lot today. But first of all, I just want to find out about how you got into teaching and in the first place, and I guess how the interest of positive education came about.
Sure. Okay, well, a lot of people in teaching have the great stories about how they always knew they were going to be a teacher. Mine is a little different. I had 2 years off after high school, and it got to a point where my mum said to me, "Now, I think you've really got to either get a job or maybe you should think about going to university now." And I said, "Yeah, I don't know what I want to do still." And she said, "What about teaching? At least you'll get good holidays." And 19-year-old me thought, that sounds pretty good to me. So off I went to university. And then when I started, I was like, oh, I actually love this. And I'm actually not bad at it either. So that is how it started. And I'm still here 10-ish years later, which breaks the teachers that leave after 5 years. And just recently, I would say I've had a new renewed love of teaching again. And I just think it's one of the best jobs you can have.
That's a great story, actually. Like, it's, I think we all got our own journeys about how we did get into teaching. And when, if I do a training session, I always ask teachers, like, one of the things I do is ask, who always wanted to be a teacher here? And some do, but like a lot don't. And it's just some of the pathways that we go down to become a teacher. But that yours is quite interesting.
Look, and to be honest, still a lot of my friends from school cannot believe this is the industry that I work in and what I do, but it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And where did I guess the passion for positive education come in along the journey?
Yeah, so I think even from the early days of teaching and even being at university learning about teaching, I always knew that there was this strong connection between well-being, I guess, but feeling good and being able to learn, and then, feeling safe in your environment and building on that psychologically safe in your environment to learn. And obviously that started with, the theory of needs met. But the positive education side of things, it really resonated with me because I could see kids that I taught, and when they felt confident and they felt good, then their learning just, you could see it take off. And then you could see kids who they lacked confidence, they didn't feel good about things, or they're going through a tough time, and, their learning was affected by that. So I always knew that there was this strong connection. And then I started my role at Radford College in Canberra about 6 years ago, and they had just implemented positive education based off the Geelong Grammar Positive Education Institute, and I just went, "Whoa, this it fascinated me," but it also put to life what I already believed about educating kids. And then from there, I thought, I need to learn more about this. So I was, and I'm still very grateful that at Radford College, I actually received a scholarship to do a professional certificate in positive education through Melbourne University. So I started that, and just I sat in this room and was like, wow, these are my people, this is my chat, I just love this, and I loved learning again, minus doing assignments and time management, everything else. And I was also really grateful, it's the first time that they'd done that where you could do the professional certificate and you could continue on to doing the Masters of Applied Positive Psychology. And so I took that on board. I was the only person in the cohort to do that. And still, I think, could be the only person who has done that. But, through completing that, I have a renewed sense of what positive education is, what positive psychology is, what well-being is. And I'm connected to this network of people that are constantly inspiring me in this space. So, yeah, it's been actually kind of life-changing in a way.
Yeah, brilliant. And you just mentioned like what positive education is. How do you, I guess, define, or not define's the right word, but how do you think about positive education?
Well, I think, it's the same with well-being. There's no actual definition, and that's why I think sometimes these things are overused or used in the wrong context. For me, I think well-being is it's not just the absence of ill-being, and I think sometimes we can mistake that is, oh, if you're doing positive education or you're doing well-being, then you won't have depression or anxiety or kids feeling sad, and we won't have those negative emotions, when the reality is that's actually life and
100%.
it's part of being human. So I think for me, positive education is about kids feeling good. Most of the time, that it's absolutely not possible to feel good all the time. But let's say, majority of the time, you're coming to school and you're feeling good, you're functioning effectively, and you're able to learn and learn effectively for you as an individual. And I think there's another part to positive education that's it's also about doing good for others. And I think that's where, you come in your practice. It's about gratitude, it's about giving back. But I don't think you can do that unless you're in a good place yourself. So I think positive education gives us a lens to go, we need to look after our well-being to be able to learn effectively and vice versa.
Yep, absolutely. And I guess just to build on that point as well, you're 100% right. Like, we things are going to go things I'm going to go away always as people. We're going to be in bad moods. And when I do like sessions with students, I always talk about that. Like, it's going to happen. We are going to have bad days. There's no doubt about it. Like, that's not what it's about. But I think it's also teaching skills to kids. If they're having a bad day, here's some strategies that you can try. Because we're all different. Like, how I guess if I'm having a bad day, what I do will be different to you. Kids will be different, but it's just open them up to ideas that they're responsible to improve their mood because they are going to have bad days, and just showing them some ideas. I think that's really important to teach young people, not only young people, adults as well. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more with that. And I think you're right. The strategies, and for you to know what works for you best. So personally for me, I know that exercise is so important for me for feeling good and actually functioning effectively as well. I know that being outdoors in nature, and there's so much research to say that that's good for you, but you know, yesterday the sun was out, went for a walk. Then I had a cold plunge dip in the ocean, which I love. And there's something about that that it just makes me feel so good and it can change my mood almost instantly. But at the same time, I'm not saying everyone needs to go and cold plunge in the ocean, because even though that's good for me, someone else might absolutely hate that.
Yeah,
So
I'm not a fan.
you're right. And it's
Too
just,
cold.
you know, that's it. And
Yeah. That.
it's the same with kids. It's like if we can provide them with these strategies and this knowledge, then when you are having a tough time or a downtime, you're right, you do have something to draw on to make you feel better or to be able to overcome that challenge in your life, because ultimately we know it's going to happen.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, you're right. Like, as I mean, my number one as well, exercise without a doubt. Like, obviously, you don't have to wait until you're in a bad mood to exercise. But if you, I love starting the day with it because it puts me in a good mood from the start of the day. And I'm able to feel I'm able, like, productive, but also able to handle things if things come up during the day better. And but if I do have a bad day, I know that exercise will improve my mood, like for you as well, Beck. And I think it's important to teach young people that as well. Like, it might not be, I don't know, their number one thing, but I think it's important to say, well, physical activity is good for our bodies, but it's also, or in my opinion, it's even better for our minds. And just getting to think about that, because I don't know if we talk about that enough, overall to young people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think more and more we're overcomplicating what well-being is.
True. Yeah.
And more I'm finding that, you know, we've got this pressure on us, and it's like, but particularly as adults as well, it's like, do some mindfulness, do a meditation, exercise, you know, make sure everything's in order and you're organized, make sure you're happy. You know, it can be really exhausting. And I think that that's sometimes why we get a lot of people who roll their eyes at the, you know, well-being or positive psychology space. But I think, like you just said, it's pick and choose what you need and when you need it, and knowing that it's there for you, and whatever works best for you to function effectively and feel good for yourself.
Yeah, 100%. And I know there's a lot of, you're right. Like, it's quite a, well, I mean, if you want to call it an industry or a movement or whatever it is, it's like quite a, like, I don't know if the flooded's the right word, but it's quite a busy industry where people trying to do the right thing, but there's just so much coming at us. And I mean, I've grown with gratitude in a way. Like, that's a school program, and started, well, 2014, I guess, when particularly that was when it was pushing in schools. And I've just seen so many, it evolved so much since then, and it sort of gets overwhelming for yourself. And but what I found is just sticking, like, I haven't really shifted too much from the original, I guess, philosophy of growing with gratitude, which is just consistent practice of some simple habits and just showing and teaching kids and playing games as a way to practice. But it can get quite confusing. And like, and I think personally, I have to just pull myself up, just like sometimes just to think about, okay, this is the philosophy, just stick with it. Like, I know what you're saying. Like, it can be quite overwhelming and daunting for people, but just finding out what works for you is important, just sticking with it, I think.
Absolutely. And I was at an event last night at Melbourne University, which was talking about the arts and well-being and the correlation there. And as they were speaking, I was thinking, oh, we do choir once a week on a Friday for half an hour. And I didn't even think about that as being well-being as such. And yet, huge correlations between music and neuroscience and our brains. And I think, oh, wow, like that's not something that I would say, oh, that's our positive education program or framework. And yet, that's things that we do consistently, which we know is really good for us. So, you know, I think less is more. And you're right, little habits or things that we can build into our curriculum and our daily life in schools or in life outside of schools, can make such a huge difference. And that is actually living well-being.
Oh, 100%. But I want to shift slightly now into the classroom, because one thing I love to do is talk to teachers who, I guess, practice positive education in the classroom, and just share some ideas that have worked for you. So maybe some practical strategies you've found most successful in promoting positive education in the classroom. I guess some of those things that kids maybe have embraced and you've seen effective. And earlier you mentioned about you're seeing the confident students tend to do, I'm not sure tend to do better is the right word, but maybe, probably do better, I don't know. But then you've got the not so confident kids who sometimes struggle. So perhaps, I guess it's a two-part question really, but what are some of those strategies that you've seen work in the classroom, and how do you build confidence in kids who maybe lack it?
Sure. I learned about this theory through doing the MAP program, and resonated so much with me. And it's a theory of motivation and self-determination theory. And it's got three components to it, which is confidence, autonomy, and relatedness. And that just really put a theory onto what I see with kids, right? So if you're not competent at what you're learning or the skill that you're doing in the classroom, your motivation to do it is going to be lacking, right? And that's the same for us as adults. It's like if we're not good at doing something, if we're challenged by it, if we find it complicating, then our motivation to do it lacks. But on the flip side, if we are good at doing it, then our motivation is going to be there. And then autonomy, which is something that I've really focused in on, is where can we provide choice to kids? So I think in the classroom, there's a lot of time spent do this, do this, do that, do this, right? And it's like, how can we open this up and give student voice and give student choice and then create this responsibility for them over their learning? Now, it doesn't always work. And there's obviously times where we actually need to draw that in a lot. But there are areas, even if it's as simple as you can choose whether you write in a lead pencil or a pen or a texter. And we think that that's, you know, we've got these sort of vices or mindset as a teacher, and I'm absolutely guilty of it, where you're like, they need to write in pencil because they're in year two, you know,
The
when
old pen license when
realistically,
you're about year
right?
four.
100%. And, you know, like, I hate to say this, but so much of education is like we're still in kind of a archaic dinosaur age, and it's like we need to innovate a little bit here and think differently because we have different kids, you know, to when we were growing up or at school. So things like that. And then in terms of learning, it's like drawing on kids' interests, like ultimately, what you want in the classroom is kids to be engaged in their learning. So you need to know your kids as learners as well. But once you get them engaged, like their motivation is just through the roof. And there's nothing I love more than when you see kids who are in flow, they don't want to stop the activity because they're just loving it. Recently, in a writing session, we've been creating graphic novels. Now, the group of kids I have just love drawing. And, so I went around and I got a reflection from all of them. Every single kid was like, I'm loving this. Like, I want to do more of it. I'm so excited to do it. When are we doing it next? So the more we can harness that, the better. So yeah, I think you got to know your kids and your learners.
Can I just butt in there, Beck?
And
Can I say something, ask a question
yeah.
there? How do you get to know your students as learners? So is it over time? Is there certain things you can do? Is it more observation? How do you actually get to know them as learners?
Well, look, I think the key thing working in a school, and that doesn't matter whether you're a teacher or, whatever your job is building relationships, because it's just the core thing that you need for success in the community, the environment. So, I mean, it's looked hard because I feel like I do it quite effortlessly. So thinking about how I do it
I know what you mean.
is
You
quite
sort of,
challenging.
yeah. I think is it
But
just more observation and what you learn? Like you just see them how they react and how they, I don't know, engage in different activities. Then you work out just based on that. Because I sort of know what you mean. It's sort of hard to explain because you probably just know kind of thing.
I do. And I think for me, it's those little opportunities where you have these conversations with kids. And, that's not necessarily in your core teaching time, but it's, when you're walking to something or you see them at lunchtime and you're on duty and you find out these things about them, you think, oh, I never knew that about you or, whatever it is. And I think, yeah, it's the little things, but I also think building that partnership and that good relationship with parents and families at home is it's so important as well. And when we're talking about positive education and just something, I guess that I've observed since being at Geelong Grammar is this really beautiful community feel. And for example, we don't have for the primary kids, obviously, we don't have any buses, and the parents literally have to park outside the school, which is probably very annoying for them. They have to park outside the school and they actually have to walk in to pick up their kid. Now, it sounds really simple, but the fact that you see and speak to those parents nearly every single day of the week or whoever's picking them up, I mean, that is invaluable. And I think it's about belonging and togetherness, but it's also about creating those relationships and having that communication that is in real life. So I've worked in settings before and certainly due to COVID, where we moved quite quickly to email, right? So it's like everyone emails, that's your communication. And so much of the time we get messages that are, miscommunicated or not understood that end up in meetings and end up in, you're feeling stressed and they're feeling stressed too, no doubt. And there's this lapse of time between your communication. So something as simple as that is actually having real life interaction, which I think we're losing a lot as a society, makes a huge difference.
I actually really love that because because I mean, so often now the schools have the drop-off areas. They just drive through, pick up their kids, and go. But having that, like, is that an intentional thing, or is that just the way that it's set up at the school where there's no really where to have a pickup? Because you're the
Oh, that's the
two-route
thing.
campus at Geelong
Yeah,
Grammar.
so literally there is nowhere really to pick up as well, but it's one of those things that I think it has so much power in it. And I think more and more what we're finding out in research is saying that, we've got this loneliness epidemic because we are literally, it's easier to be in your car and wave and have your kid jump in, right? But actually, what would be better for all of us is if you got out, had a conversation, interacted with a few people, it would be good for all of us. So that's just something that I've observed that it builds a beautiful community and a beautiful culture.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good idea. Well, I mean, it might be force in a way. But that's such a, you make a really good point, because by having just those conversations with like parents or their caregivers, and often you might have a conversation where they're standing around with the kids as well. So it's a, it involves everyone, and just those might not, as you said before, might not sound very much, but I reckon that can make a huge difference once you think about it. Because sometimes I
It's
don't think
huge.
like you, yeah, sorry, go on.
And you know, if something's gone wrong or something, you know, has happened that day, the fact that, you know, in real time you can say, hey, this is what happened, and have a conversation about it, it also means that you don't have to go and sit down and draft an email and send that off and then reply, and it takes that out of it, which, you know, we have a massive issue globally with teacher burnout. And you know, any strategies or ways that we can work out that we can decrease teachers' burnout and their workload, you know, I think is something that we've really got to look into. Like, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that's one way to do it, as you just mentioned. So do you have any specific, I don't know, activities or games that you do with students in the positive education space, or is it more integrated into all subjects, or is it, do you, what I'm trying to ask is, do you allocate, say, a bit of time each day or during the week to specifically do a positive education lesson, or is it more mixed into the subjects or both?
Both. So I mean, I'm a big believer that well-being is everyone's responsibility, and particularly as teachers, because I think sometimes we think that there's someone in your school or workplace in a role of this is the well-being leader or this is the head of well-being or whatever the role is. And we kind of think, oh, well, it's their job to look after this space. When in reality, I think you, as the teacher at the forefront of those kids every day, you're the most integral part of well-being coming to life through every lesson. You know, it's not just the one-off well-being lesson or whatever you do. So we do positive education lessons. Look, we aim to do them and it's timetabled for once a week. In the reality of working in a school, sometimes that doesn't happen. And I think that's also the other thing. You've got to be flexible. Because working in a school has 1,000 disruptions all the time, carnivals, everything else, right? So I'll give you an example. This past term, our theme was looking at mindsets. So we look at a theme for each term throughout the year, and we have a brilliant positive education leader at our school, Jackie Moses. And so she throws out resources and things that we can use, but we also have autonomy as a teacher to go with that however we want, which I also think is really important. So when we're looking at mindsets, it just so happened that it coincided with the Olympic Games and the Paralympics. And so I drew on that, which was not only super engaging for the kids, but it was also really relevant. And they were super engaged in it. And I'm hopeful that then they will hold on to some of those lessons or theory behind that. So we looked at what mindsets are, then defining that. Then we looked at growth mindset, fixed mindset, and also having them come up with their own definitions
Interesting. Yeah.
that can change, right? Because I think that's really important, is that they have their voice into what that means, not just sort of front loading them like this is what a growth mindset is, you know? And then from there, we used a few, I would say, provocations. So we looked at Paralympian swimmer Alexa Leary. And like, I was so engaged with the story. And I think that's a great thing about teaching, is you actually learn a lot yourself. And so we looked at her story and the fact that she was an excellent athlete and was top of her game, and then had an accident, suffered a brain injury, and then here she is. She's learnt to walk and talk and everything else again, and she's at the Paralympics. So we looked at that, and that is the epitome of what a growth mindset is, because that is facing probably one of the biggest challenges you ever will. And then when she swam at the Paralympics, we were watching that as a class, and they were so invested in it. And I've got an 8-year-old boy going, I just can't believe this. I cannot believe that this person has been able to do this. So yeah, it was contextual, but then they have to apply it to their life, right? So to make it impactful. So then, when they're doing something challenging for themselves, whatever that is, doesn't have to be sport, but it could be that they find writing challenging. And they're able to draw on that and go, I'm gonna try my best. I'm gonna be my best at this that I can. But also the other element of growth mindset is getting feedback and being open-minded to people who actually are experts or good at this. And so you develop this community in your classroom where kids are going, I'm not going to look at you and be jealous that you're really good at this, or I'm not going to put you down. I'm actually going to try and learn from you and what you do. So,
That's really
yeah,
interesting.
really, really valuable.
And I guess how do you what sort of practical activities or lessons did you do during that mindset, term or across the Olympics? What were some of those activities or games or lessons?
So particularly looked at, they created a mindset goal for themselves as well. So once we defined these terms, discussed it, looked at a few provocations of people, then it was their job to create a mindset goal for themselves. So where is an area where I currently have a fixed mindset, and what could I do to change that? And then how will I know that I've achieved it? So that's, something that we'll now look at again. But touching on that, I know I mentioned I was on school camp last week, and I actually personally, I'm not really a camper, and the thought of school camp for 3 days actually wasn't the most thrilling thing for me. But once I get there, I just realize how valuable that experience is. And when we learn these things, say you're learning about mindset, or you're learning about gratitude, you're learning about strengths. And then when we were, on camp, it's just like all those things come so easily to the kids. So, we sat around in a circle and what were you grateful for today? And it's so easy for them to come up with because they're having this experience. Whereas sometimes you do that in the classroom and they're like, oh, I was grateful for my friend for smiling at me, and it's like very surface level. But when we were on camp, it was like, I'm so grateful for my friend who helped me today to overcome my fear of climbing up the ropes. So yeah, it changes. And speaking of that, which I think is such an integral part of positive education or well-being, outdoor education, unfortunately, I'm hearing more and more that, particularly in government schools, that the funding for these things are being cut. And yeah, I mean, it's something I'm just a huge believer in because it gets everyone, teachers included, myself, out of your comfort zone into a new environment, but also off your devices.
Absolutely. Now, I mean, I've been on lots of school camps as well when I was teaching, and it's really, and they're all three, 2 nights, 3 day type setups, and I love them. Really enjoyed going on them for that reason as well. You see the kids in a different environment. Some handle it really well, some don't, depending on their age, of course. And but it just, I think those, and they create memories as well, for the kids and the teachers. And so much can come out of it, from that perspective that you're talking about there, in a different environment on camps. But it's a shame that I think, particularly during COVID, what I think happened is that that camps shut down, outdoor ed camps, you couldn't go on them. And it seems like I haven't re or come back as well, hope as well as maybe people expected. And obviously, your school goes on camp still, but a lot of them don't. And it's a bit of a
Yeah.
shame because I reckon there's so much, like, talking about positive education, so much can come out of it.
Absolutely. And it's because of the current system that we have in education, and as I said, I probably speaking from a place of somewhat privilege, because we have the resources and the access and the funding to be able to do these things. And I know certainly not everyone does. But the benefits and the impact that come out of outdoor education are, they're sort of invaluable in a way. I think we really need to sort of have a think about that in terms of what we're investing in for our kids. But also, we've got to look at, there's so many schools at the moment that they're just lacking actually the resources of having the teachers and the staff to
Oh,
go on
yeah,
camps.
absolutely. It's true. Yeah.
So there's so many complex issues
Yeah.
that
And
come into play.
yeah.
The last thing I want to do is say, everyone should go on outdoor education because it's so good for you. And it's like, well, we don't have the means to do that,
Yeah.
but I think it's really an area to look into and, to
Yeah.
possibly try and find the resources and funding.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was a time when most schools would go on camp. So I guess it's just, I know you're right though, because schools at the moment, like particularly, I know that in, I mean, it's probably everywhere, but Victoria, like at, where you're at in, or in Beck, is like teachers at like schools are struggling to, like if a couple of teachers are sick, they're actually struggling to find teachers to come in and take their place. So it was actually Mildura. Last was it last week? Yeah, last week. And I was at the special school there, and the principal said, "Oh, we're just having trouble staffing. If kid, parents are away, there's just sorry, if teachers are away, there's just no one to bring in for that day in the area." So it's we're talking about metro and regional. It's a you're right. It's a bit of a challenge at the moment. But I think you made a good point. It's something to think about and consider about how we can get. I guess more camps happening again, like probably how they used to happen well before or before COVID times anyway. But I've got a couple more points I want to
Yeah, and
talk about.
oh, go. Yeah,
Oh, so
no.
you're gonna oh do you wanna say something else or
I was just going to touch on that as well and just say, like, in terms of speaking about positive education, first and foremost, I think, looking after our teachers
yeah.
and having teachers who are well and who are also functioning effectively and who, I have no doubt that we have so many passionate teachers out there, but so many of them are burnt out and don't have the resources and don't have the energy to put into pod ed wellbeing teaching as itself. So I think the more we can do in that space as well, and I go back to less is more. We've re really got
Yeah.
to think about how our workloads are, just exceeding what is possible.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I guess just, I mean, keeping on the world, the positive education theme, where do you see positive education next 5 to 10 years? Do you see similar path that we're going, or do you see big change, or what, how do you think about that in the next 5 to 10 years, particularly in schools? Yeah.
I guess my hope would be that we have some a real educational reform in Australia and some real systematic changes, because realistically, I just don't think we're going to have the impact on our young people just through doing wellbeing programs. I think it's got to come at a real systematic change. And I went to a Dean's lecture last week with Parsi Sahlberg, and he's done incredible research into Australian schools and many schools. So it's not just saying, this is what we're seeing in private schools or public schools. He went to so many schools and put together, I think it's a Fairer education system. I have to, but it's a paper, and you know, it's for the Australian government, and he makes so many good points in it. And really what we need to do, so one of them was building curiosity in kids, you know, less is more outdoor time. You know, a phenomenal fact from that talk was that in Australia we have the longest school days in the world,
Yeah, right.
and yet our result, in the world, and our results, both academic and our well-being scores, are deteriorating at a rapid pace. So, you know, as he was saying, obvious thing there is we're doing so much, and yet it's not having the desired effect. So we really need to step back and have a look and go, well, what change needs to happen? And ultimately, like, we can't keep waiting for things to, you know, just get better, because I think, you know, I look back to, gosh, when I was at school a million years ago, but life was just so much more simpler. And
It's
whether
true,
that,
like
you
you're
know,
100% right.
sure,
Yeah. Well, technology's got a lot
it's
to play in that role, hasn't
technology.
it? There's so many much stuff out there now, like, and so many more options for teachers and schools. And what I notice is that, and you'll know this more than anyone, Beck, like often things get added to a daily schedule of school and not much taken away. There seems to be a lot of, I don't know if it's a program added, or let's use this tool and nothing gets sort of sub or taken away. It's more stuff on laid on top. And you're right, like and I think it comes out of technology, I reckon, a lot as well, that there's so much around at the moment. People want to, I guess people are setting up like businesses with good intentions to hopefully help education. And I guess it's up to the school. I mean, schools don't have to do everything, of course, but it's just so many options out there and it can get quite overwhelming. And I think that's one of the reasons why you talked about teacher burnout before. Just so much stuff gets added, plus the data that needs gets collected as well. Like it's gone over the top. And like for me, that children's data, like collecting kids' data, I don't know about your thoughts on this, but I'm very skeptical. Like if you were going to do a survey or a student, I know pre and post a longitudinal survey with students, like I'm still like this as an adult. Like, I don't, sometimes I'll just put what people want to hear. Like Uber Eats, like not that I have Uber Eats anymore, but there was a couple of times I did. I'll just give somebody a five because it's a business and maybe it was a bit cold, but who cares? Like, give them a five. And like, kids are the same. Like, they'll just either put down what you want to hear or just how they're feeling at the time. They might be in a bad mood. And then we're collecting this data, but I think it's added on. And I don't know if, I guess it's valuable in some ways, but just talking about before, how you said, like, it seems a bit simpler. I think this is something that's made things a lot more complicated, this data.
Absolutely. And look, my biggest belief is that, you know, we talk about having this holistic view of kids, and yet, you know, when you talk about data, I'm like, the kid's not a number. There's a story there behind them. And, you know, I was at a conference the other week, and I always get really stumped when it, you know, it's like, you press in some numbers and then it says your reading age is 9 years and 2 months. And I'm like, what even is that? You know,
What does that mean?
what is that? Because, like, do I get a reading age? Like, it's just really, it's kind of bizarre to me, because it's more about, you know, you've got those fundamental things in reading, you know, are they comprehending the text? Do they read fluently? Do they read accurately? Right. And then somehow we come up with this age in months, and, you know, and then you have to type that in too. And, you know, reporting and the admin and everything else, you know, in schools is, well, I mean, I've lived it. And, you know, it's too much, because you're on the job. Like, when you're in front of those kids, you know, and you should be, like, you should be able to engage your class and be doing some really great innovative learning with them. But if you've got 500 admin tasks that are outweighing you, you know, it has to affect you.
Oh, absolutely. And I think we need to get back to the the reason for teachers is that they're there to teach kids, like at the end of the day. And but there's so much other stuff that goes along with it. And half the time, you know that all this stuff's coming after school that you have to do on the weekends, that it can actually take away from what you actually paid to do, so to speak, like is actually teach. And I think just it'd be great talking about like reviews and stuff like that. It'd be great to have some kind of review about
And
what is necessary and what's not.
far too many meetings that literally could be an
Yes,
email or
or
a
don't get me on
conversation,
meetings,
right?
like
You know, like, or you know, and the biggest thing for me is, and that's just me as a person, it's like it hits 3 o'clock and like I'm pretty done for the day because I use up so much energy being in front of a class.
Boy.
Like, you know, come 3 o'clock, my cognitive load, like I'm done. A bit like the kids, right? And then you go and sit in a meeting and you know, you're being asked to think about your really complex things sometimes. And like I just don't have the capacity to do it. So yeah, I think we've got to work smarter as well in that space.
Well, absolutely. And yeah, 100%. And I just to shift, coming to, and Amy's been a great chat, Beck, and really appreciate your insights. But I just want to hear about, I know that you're passionate about positive education. And I know that maybe, I don't know, I'm not putting words in your mouth, but perhaps in the future you'd like to have a bit more, I'm not sure, a bit more of an impact, but maybe roll out something for yourself, like in this space. Because I know you've got a couple of accounts. The Instagram is the No BS to Positive Education. No BS to Wellbeing.
That it was just sort of, I think I finished doing the course and there's all this kind of weird pressure that's like, well, you need to go and have a wider impact on the world now, right? And I agree with that, but I love teaching and you know, I know there's many people out there that won't have that same philosophy of me right now, but I just don't love teaching well-being or positive education. Like I love teaching literacy and I love teaching maths and I love teaching inquiry. And I'm actually not willing to give that up just yet. So for me, in the future, yes, I feel really passionate about looking. There was a unit that I did at Melbourne Uni that was called Design, Delivery, and Evaluation of Wellbeing. And I think that is where I would like to go somewhere in the future is to help schools to be able to design wellbeing frameworks, programs for their context, because I think that's very important that we're not
Absolutely.
generalizing that it's a one size fits all. So what do you need? Let's not just develop something or do something for the sake of it. Let's be really purposeful about what you need in this space. And what are you hoping to get out of this? And I think a lot of the time, what we're not doing is you're putting a program in place, you're putting a framework in place, you've got, you know, your well-being lessons, but no one's evaluating it and evaluating the impact. And there is a lot of measures, you know, of well-being. And like we touched on before, some of them are very subjective, but there is measures there. So having the means to be able to do that and then evaluate it and go, this is not getting our desired effect. So, you know, we've implemented this program or we're doing these lessons, but realistically, our kids' behaviors or their attitudes or their learning, it's not changing. So, you know, take it out, start again, like, you know, renew. So that's what I would like to do. I'd like to tailor well-being for the group or the environment at some point. But like I said, I'm still kind of loving teaching.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's really good. And I think that's, you make a really good point there about the context. Each school is different. Like the context of each school is so different. Like you've got regional schools. I've been fortunate enough to go to some schools last year where there's like 10 kids at the school. Like the whole school has got 10
Yeah.
kids. And that's obviously going to be a different context to a big school with, particularly primary school, maybe 500 or 600 students. Like it's totally different. So It's a really good idea, actually, and I think
Yeah,
there's a lot of opportunity there.
I think a lot of the time we're also forgetting about our English as a second language learners
Yes.
or community that more and more prevalent in our schools. And, you know, even for me, I look at there's so much language that we're giving out, you know, whether that's emotions and particularly in the well-being space, right? And I'm like, oh my goodness, it must be so overwhelming for these learners in our space to, and how are they accessing it? And so, you know, we have to think about that as well. And we have to think about how we include others, but also what their culture and context is and what they need for that. Because I don't think it's, you know, we have the same general needs for humans, but then they differ quite vastly.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you make some really good points, and I really enjoyed our conversation, Beck. A lot of great insights, a lot of great. I appreciate you sharing your knowledge, because you've certainly been passionate about this over the last probably decade or so since you've been teaching, and then had the opportunity to do the Masters of Applied Positive Psychology as well, which was a having a great thing to have under your belt. Name. So
Great.
it's a great thing. So I really appreciate the time. Where can people find you? I'll put a few links in the show notes. I know that you've got the
Yeah,
Instagram
so
account.
LinkedIn, I use that a lot to share, particularly if I've come across some research or been to a conference or something like that. So I use that space. I do have, yeah, an Instagram account, which is sort of like a personal blog, but again, just post some research and practical things on there or thought-provoking things for people. So yeah, that would be good to connect. And thank you so much for having me as well.
Yeah, no worries, it's been a pleasure. And yeah, as I said, I love talking to teachers, and because you're the ones in the classroom doing it, and that's why I think you get the most insight. So really appreciate the time, Beck, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome. Have a good day. Thank you.
Thanks, Beck.